Welcome to Investor Resources with your hosts, Don Creech and Perry Sykes, who both realize that the market doesn't know what keeps you up at night. It doesn't know when you want to retire, and it doesn't know how old you are. The simple truth is, the market doesn't care. But if you care, then you've tuned in at the perfect time. You're listening to Investor Resources, bringing clarity to the confusing world of finance. Here are your hosts of Investor Resources, Don Creech and Perry Sykes.
Well, good morning. This is Don Creech.
And this is Perry Sykes. Welcome to the show, everyone.
So we are here to talk about finances, the stock market, investing generally. If it has to do with money in the capital markets, then we're game. It is a live radio program, which means that we have open phone lines now that the auto guy's gone, or at least he's on his way out of the office, the studio. The phone number is 888-312-5757, 888-312-5757, and you can get on the board. We'll be notified of what your question is, and we will get to you to have a discussion. So make yourself known in KVI country. Just pick up the phone and dial
888-312-5757.
Well, in case you hadn't paid any attention to the news this week, there are a few things which are up in the air. We could call these binary events. They either are or they are not. They're either positive or they're negative. When we are waiting to find out the answer of how they turn out. And the primary one happens to be the stimulus package. It either is or it is not. Does appear that maybe.
Depending on what time of day it is, because sometimes it is in the morning and it isn't by lunch, and then it is again by late lunch. And you never
That's
can
right.
tell.
That's right. Those headlines come in almost on the hour. And then we have the election. Either Trump wins or loses. Biden wins or loses. The Democrats win the Senate or they don't. The Fed decides it's going to add more liquidity or it won't. I mean, there's just tons of things that are either or here, which makes for exciting days in the markets. For right now, the immediate new carrot dangled in front of the markets this week is the long-discussed stimulus package. And as you just pointed out, Perry, it's almost every hour. It's like the market is psychotic. You just have no idea what it's going to do.
It's amazing how much difference it makes these days. I mean, stimulus was not something that got talked about much, and then COVID hit, and now all of a sudden it's, you know, the most important thing to the market these days. It's just become top of the list. What are we going to do about stimulus?
Well, we know the White House wants some version of it. We know the Democrats want it. We know the Fed wants it because they've been telling Congress you've got to get off your backside and get this done because we're out of ammo. But Wall Street wants it, and that's probably the ultimate arbiter here, that what Wall Street wants, they tend to get. So
it's that old rule, follow the money, you know, follow the money. And that's when you'll see where things are being driven from.
And you want to find out where the money ended up this month, then you should register for our next market update webinar, which is on November 7th, 15 minutes after this show is over. We go live again, and people are already registering for that. All you have to do is go to our website, iriradio.com is the shortcut. And that will get you down to the lower left-hand corner. It says webinar. A couple of quick clicks, your email, and you'll be set to receive a link to join the webinar. And if you cannot attend live, you will get a replay link as long as you've registered. If you don't register, we don't know who you are. We can't send you one. But we get the replay link pretty quickly, and we get that out. You can watch it on your own time. And I just, you know, we are approaching a fairly high list of people who have already watched the replay link of October. And is the replay link for October? Yeah, it is.
It's up. You bet.
It's in the video tab. Correct. If you want to watch what we did this month, you just go to the website, iriradio.com, and go to the video tab. And right there is October. And you click on that, you'll get an access link, and you can watch it as many times as you want. Well, it seems that everything depends on the U.S. stimulus, and the biggest beneficiaries since we want the stimulus to be spread across the country and help people who have lost their jobs. But the biggest beneficiary seems that it's billionaires.
Amazing.
They apparently needed a lot of help. Well, actually, what's happened is that they happen to be the biggest owners of the stock market, and with the free largesse coming from Congress and the Fed, that money had to go someplace, went to the market. And the market, while it has been volatile, last month didn't look like the money was coming in at all, but the benefit to billionaires, because they're biggest stockholders, is the biggest benefit. So the wealth of the wealthiest and consumer spending are really the two things that we are watching. But, you know, who would have thought that a few trillion dollars here and there would be such a big deal?
Oh, man, it is a big deal, especially on, like I said, Don, especially on the consumer spending side. A lot of people are out of work. They've been put out of work by the government. You know, it's always, well, COVID shut us down. It's like, well, no, the government shut us down. COVID just showed up. So the shutdowns are a reaction to it. And that has put a significant number of people out of work. It's reduced a lot of people's jobs way down from where they were previous to the outbreak. And if that stimulus doesn't show up, a lot of those people don't keep spending. And that's one of the reasons that the market has been able to hang in so far. There are some businesses that are doing okay. And that's because people have money. And that was a lot of that was stimulus money. And now we don't know if it's coming or not. We think it is. We think it isn't. We think it is again. So we'll see. We'll see where that goes. But it is important that if we're not going to be able to let people work, then they're going to have some money to spend from somewhere.
Well, one of those places of where is they aren't having to make mortgage or rent payments. So they still have money to spend. It's just that the landlords and the banks have less.
They're holding the bag. That's right.
Yeah. We've just simply transferred the problem from the households to, well, in the landlord business, it's basically another household. In fact, it's really interesting in San Francisco. The city shut down.
Right.
I think I may have mentioned a couple of weeks ago, I saw pictures of the financial district in San Francisco, and the place is empty. I mean, even one of the funniest things, I saw a guy standing on the street corner of an empty street waiting for the traffic light to change so he could walk across. Apparently, there's still risk of getting a ticket for walking against a red light.
Old habits die hard, right? Wait for the light to change. There you go.
But a good portion of the real estate in downtown San Francisco were condos, no surprise, but they were not owned by residents. They were owned by investors who were renting them out on Airbnb, and all of a sudden, there's no tourist. The supply of properties for sale in San Francisco is hitting new highs. That the $1 trillion of spending from the government is not helping them out.
No, you can't override supply and demand. Supply and demand always sets the price. And when all of a sudden there's a huge increase in supply, which there is right now, and a huge drop in demand, the prices are going to go down. That's going to happen every time.
Surprisingly, they haven't dropped very much yet, about 10, maybe 14% in some areas. But
they're hanging on. That's right.
I think there's probably some bigger drops coming in order to get out from underneath them. I was surprised. A relatively small condo, the carrying costs between condo fees, taxes, and a mortgage, it runs about $6,000 a month. You got a bigger unit. Oof. I mean, it's a drain on resources, and that's the reason they want to dump these properties. But talking about dumping the market, President Trump did that on Tuesday when he said that we aren't going to have any more stimulus negotiations. And frankly, I mean, I understand his position, because the stumbling block here between the administration and the House of Representatives is that Pelosi wants to include a ton of money designated for New York, California, Illinois, Minnesota, to help solve their fiscal problems, because they have not been paying their bills. They've been borrowing money, and now it's pretty hard to borrow in this environment. And they haven't been paying their pension contributions. And Pelosi thinks it's fair for the rest of us throughout the country to pitch in and help those three state governments.
Which really doesn't make any sense. And there's no way to frame that as a stimulus of any kind, which, and, you know, that was, as you said, Don, that was the stumbling point. And so negotiations eventually broke down. And I'm glad we're not footing the bill for that. That doesn't make any sense.
Well, I think that's as much stimulus as I think it was the Opera House in New York that a whole ton of money went to. And the day after they got it, they fired all their employees. Yep, that was a special deal in the first stimulus package.
Very nice outcome, yeah.
Anyway, ouch. one of the things that is unintended consequences, and there are always some. And if you want to talk about that related to finances and the market, I mean, we have an open phone line, 888-312-5757, 888-312-5757. Give us a call. We'd be glad to try to answer your question with you anyway. But the unintended consequences here is that Congress is going to put all this money out on payroll support, people getting tons of extra money to keep the households going, and theoretically to support business activity, which states then shut down. So you had to go online. If you were an online company, you're celebrating this. But if you're brick and mortar, like a restaurant, man, that celebration's hard to come by.
Big trouble, yeah.
They are really in trouble. But the other unintended consequence here is that instead of spending a lot of this money, people who are a little concerned about whether or not their job's even going to come back have done what? They've been paying down their credit card. That is un-American.
Well, you can bet that was unforeseen. You know, nobody in Congress thought anybody was going to pay your bills? No. We don't do that here. No one else will do that, right? They'll just spend the money. It was like, no, we're going to take this opportunity to build in a little bit of a backstop for ourselves anyway.
So credit card balances and other revolving credit have unexpectedly fallen by a huge amount, by $3 billion in the month of August. I mean, that the balance outstanding has dropped to $950 billion. That's still a lot of money. But it's the lowest level since 17, and it was we first hit $950 billion in total outstanding debt in 07.
How about that?
And who's crying? Well, of course, the banks are. I mean, at zero interest rate, and they make a loan. I mean, I've heard First Mortgage is advertised on the radio for 2.75.
Sure.
That's not a very high rate. And the banks are supposed to make money on the margin, the spread between their cost of money and that. I mean, that's pretty hard. So where they do make money is on credit card balances, with credit card rates around 30%. And if you're paying off your credit card, I mean, you are hurting your bank. You should feel sorry for the banker.
How about that? People actually got extra money, got some stimulus, and said, hey, let's pay down our credit card debt. And that may be because that they know they're going to need to use it later, but they may not. And the good news is people were actually thinking about this and said, hey, you know what? We have an opportunity to improve our personal financial picture here. Let's do it. And that was heartening, actually, to see some bills being paid down.
Well, and people use credit lines or credit cards. Businesses use credit lines instead of holding a whole bunch of cash, which earns zero interest, and say, well, why not just use my credit line and pay it off at the end of the month? So I'm getting a free use of money for my 30 days or 25, whatever in the cycle. So people with large cash balances are not as common as they were a couple of decades back.
That's nice. That's good. That's good to hear. Yeah.
Yeah. Our percentage change on the declining amount of revolving consumer credit has dropped down to levels actually that are approaching the low in 2010, because with the 08-09 market crash and the economy started slowing in 07, summer of 07, people started doing the same thing. Hey, I'm not getting overtime. I've had to go to part time. We don't know if the job's going to survive. We better deal with our debt. Now, there was no mortgage debate about whether or not you can forego your mortgage payment at that time. So people were conscientious about, we got to control this or we're going to lose our house. And a lot of them did.
You
but
betcha.
Now we've got this surplus money you know, that last recession is still pretty fresh in a lot of people's minds, saying maybe this startup time is going to take a lot longer than anybody has been talking about. One of the other unintended consequences of shutting down an entire economy, and we're not alone. I mean, it's happened all around the world. Whether or not it was the best decision, will probably take another 5 years of academic research to determine. Though there are,
and we don't have papers. We don't have 5 years. We're against our first break here in the morning, so we're going to have to go ahead and get out of here. If you've got questions about your portfolio this morning, feel free to give us a call, 888-312-5757. That's 888-312-5757. We'd be happy to talk to you about the market, the economy, anything in your portfolio that's giving you a little bit of a headache, keeping you up at night. Give us a call. We'd be happy to give you a second opinion on that. Stay with us. We will be right back.
Hey, well, all right, sir. Here we go there. What are you going to give for? I'm at $600 down here now, $10 and now, $25 and now, $35 and now, the $50 now, $60. Will you give me $60 now, $75, $75, another $85 on the bottom there?
Well, the stock market is an auction market, and the problem with the market is you never know who's going to show up. Are you going to have buyers or sellers? Somebody is going to dominate the day, and that makes a difference on which way the market trends. And with a new supply of money, usually buyers show up, but the people who have the money are the big institutional banks. And what are they going to do with it? Well, they're not lending it because for some reason they have some concerns about whether or not they might get repaid.
It's all that unemployment out there. They hate to see that. Plus, banks are looking at their own books, and they're looking at delinquency rates on existing loans, and they're a little concerned, and they are continuing to build reserves for defaults that they see coming in the future.
You know, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, actually probably a quarter ago, because the amount of money that the major banks have set aside as loan loss reserves are a charge against their current profits, and it's been billions of dollars, and then they set aside more. I'm reminded of Alfred E. Newman. What? Me worry?
Everything's fine. Nothing to see here. Yeah, everybody move along.
So one of the things that, for those of you who were working back in the 70s, and I know some of you were, one of the discussions has continually been, we owe so much debt. I mean, we'll never get out of debt as a country. This is not good. And, of course, the gold bugs come along and say, well, the country's going to collapse because of all this debt. And then Congress would say, don't worry, we have a debt ceiling. Yes, well, nobody actually said, don't worry, we have a debt ceiling and we can change it. And they have been.
Always, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's funny how it never gets lowered, though. It only goes up.
That's true. But there's an unintended consequences of lowering the debt, and that is you go into serious recession, and nobody wants to do that. So right now, after having raised the debt ceiling in 14 and 16 and 18, 19, and again this year, and again, we have debt out the wazoo, as the saying goes. Now we have broken above $27 trillion of federal debt. That's a bunch.
That's a big number. That's one of those numbers you can't really understand what that is. $27 trillion. 27's not a big number. That's not very bad, is it?
My checkbook can handle that.
$27 trillion? Oh, my goodness. That's a lot of money.
Well, we have to go back to financial theory put forth by Ludwig von Mises and the Mises Institute, which continues to promote his teachings that have something to do with free markets. Quoting him, there is no means of avoiding the financial collapse of a boom brought about by credit expansion. We have a lot of credit expansion. The only question is, when will that bubble burst? And since the government, Congress, can raise the debt ceiling even more until unintended consequences occur, it is what it is. and you have to decide whether you are going to participate or not. And or not is usually not a good option. But there are things that go wrong, I mean, particularly when investors look at, well, what comes to mind is a quote from Jesse Livermore, who was a very active trader in the beginning of the century. And I think the quote comes from Jesse Livermore, to buy when there's blood in the streets. Well, the blood in the streets wasn't funny. That was from people jumping out of their windows because they'd lost so money and they owed so much on margin to their brokers. There was no way they could pay them back. And
they
so
were done.
We got suicide. And we saw the same stuff in 29. I don't know if it was much. But the problem with that is that when we go back and look at the last major sell-off, 08, 09, there were people who were saying, hey, that man, these are good companies. These stocks are cheap, cheap, cheap. I should buy them.
That's the classic value argument. This is a good company. It's inexpensive now, and we're going to pick it up now and wait for it to come back. That's always the mantra. It's way too cheap right now. We're going to buy it when it's down and then wait for it to come back. Sometimes that works out great. Sometimes it doesn't.
Besides which, everybody buys their product.
Sure.
I mean, every household, every business has their product. And we're speaking, of course, of GE. Who doesn't have a GE light bulb or appliance, something in your house or your business made by GE? It's hard to find a place where that does not exist. So having dropped substantially in the 08 market, it would have been logical. But blood in the streets, everything's down, massive market collapse. Good, big company. It's been around for nearly a century. Why not own GE stock?
100 years on the Dow. Yep, it was a juggernaut. It was indestructible.
Well, if you had done that back in March of 09, right at the very bottom, you'd be up 27% at this point in time, and the S&P's risen 500. So, yeah, it's
not
a little
quite
bit
as
of
good.
A problem.
Yeah, not quite as good. A little behind there.
From the September 25 of 07 high, GE stock Friday is down 85%. The market from 07 high, I think, is now even. I mean, it's caught up. Well, it's ahead of that, just on a break-even standpoint. But it did rally. Back in February, before the COVID deal showed up, it had regained about 25% of its pre-Great Financial Collapse value. But since February 11th, it's fallen another 50% again. I mean, just because it's cheap at the bottom of a major collapse does not mean that you should just rush out and buy the stuff.
And it's still a big company. You know, it's a $50 billion company right now. But it was a $600 billion company, and people really tend to think that names that established are going to continue forever. They're always going to be fine. And let's see, the data here says in 2010, it was still the fifth largest stock in the U.S. stock market in 2010. And today it's, you know, tiny compared to the top of the list, you know, with Apple hitting $2 trillion and they're, you know, $50 billion. It's like they're small potatoes now, and people don't believe that kind of rotation, that kind of turnover happens in the market. And it does. In fact, it happens all the time.
Well, and there's a couple others right along with them. Citigroup, Bank of America, and AIG were all in the top 10 in 2005. And as of this week, they're down 90%. Down 42% and down 97% for AIG.
That's a lot. Yeah, that's a big drop.
So apparently these are value buys at this point in time. You just don't know whether or not they'll survive or end up in Chapter 11. And right along with them now is one of the largest global oil companies, Exxon. Will it be the next GE? We don't know. What we do know, and I've had several discussions about this with investors this week, that they have no plan with their current advisor for when to sell something. It's basically, it's a good company. Everybody buys their product. What are you worried about? Collect the dividend. Well, what if their finances are such that they can't continue to pay the dividend? What do you do then?
Happened to GE. Yeah. Happened to GE. Dividend disappeared. So you can, you know, they're as reliable as clockwork until they're not. And when they're not, you need to pay attention. That's signaling something just changed, and it's not going to come back anytime soon when they make that big dividend alteration.
Well, what is part of what's putting pressure on the oil companies is that globally the economy shut down, and so consumption on oil-related products is hard-pressed. OPEC wants to increase production, which will put more pressure on prices. They are assuming, OPEC Plus is thinking, that the economy is going to recover here. We can raise prices next quarter, being first quarter of the year. But they're now putting that on hold. Not so sure that's going to happen. And then there's the green revolution. Renewable energy is putting pressure on all of the traditional ones. And we can turn around and snicker at some of the ideas of green energy. But there are some companies that are actually making this work. And I heard a guy do an analysis on Tesla. And he said, within the next 5 years, Tesla will be producing more cars than the traditional car manufacturers. Well, you know, a lot of people have scoffed at Elon Musk and his projections, but this wasn't Elon Musk. This was an analyst. So maybe there's more to it. But NextEra Energy is the world's largest solar and wind power generator, which has surpassed ExxonMobil in market value. Boy,
how about that for a sea change? That's like when Microsoft, you know, passed IBM. It was like, wait a minute. How does that happen? And it comes from, you know, ExxonMobil being an old line, straight up fossil fuel company, and NextEra being the leader in wind and solar, anything renewable. And it's not that they don't do regular production of energy. They do, but they're looking towards that shift. They're looking for the next thing that's coming, hence their name, NextEra. And Exxon, it's not that Exxon isn't. It's just that they're much less interested. They are much more entwined in the old school delivery of fossil fuels. And, you know, that shift came today. And it's not because NextEra grew as big as Exxon used to be. It's that ExxonMobil is shrinking so rapidly.
Well, and Exxon has the same problem that AT&T did when cellular phones came up, and IBM did when Gates introduced DOS. IBM's basically said, who on earth needs a computer at home? You know, that's a business activity. We don't need that. It almost cost them their business.
Got close. It did.
And AT&T buried with copper line. I mean, you can't just jump away from that. You have all the carry costs, and Exxon's got the same thing. They have a ton of
infrastructure.
Infrastructure. Some of it's antiquated. They spend money updating it, but that takes time and money.
Speaking of time, Don, we should take a break here. We're at the bottom of the hour. We got to get out of here.
Yep. We have to do that again.
We do. We're a little bit over here, but Daryl's not yelling at us yet, so we're gonna make it. If you're not getting our Week in Review, that's our weekly email newsletter about the things that have happened this week and the things you should take note of. You should. It's a little valuable piece. People really enjoy it, and you can sign up for that just by sending us an email at help@IRIradio. That's help@IRIradio.com. And just put Week in Review in the subject line. We need your name and address, and then we will get you signed up for that. You'll start receiving that this Monday. It is a nice little piece. There's so much economic news out there today, and so much of it is just noise, and we try to let you know what's important and what is not. If you have questions this morning about anything important to you in the finance or investment market, give us a call, 888-312-5757. That's 888-312-5757. You are listening to Investor Resources here on Talk Radio 570 KVI. We'll be right back.
Well, Perry, on the our promo there, you mentioned the falling earnings. I mean, the earnings have been falling for the last 2 years. The market has not reflected. Well, let's say the stock indices have not reflected that because they've been dominated by the tech companies. But the rest of the market, if you look at underneath there, the majority of companies have continued to lower earnings. And now we're looking forward. The market's always a forward-looking animal and looking forward for what's going to happen in the second quarter of next year. And so far, there's a company that collects this kind of data. It's called the FactSet.com. And they have a recent survey of 285 S&P 500 companies, so a little more than half of the companies, and they found that 52% of them are not putting out their earnings forecast.
At all.
At all.
Just going to skip it, yeah.
They're basically, CEOs are saying, we don't have a clue. We do not know what to tell you. So you're on your own, which is why we are trend followers and we look at prices, because prices reflect the opinion of the crowd. Go back to Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. Anybody who was confused about a question would go, the ones who went to the audience and used the audience, the wisdom of the crowd, fared better than any of their other choices to get help. And that's what the stock market is. It is the wisdom of the crowd. Not always the smartest thing to do, but you...
it's not perfect. Nothing is, but there is a broad consensus there that can be had.
You have to pay attention to what's going on. Just buying and holding something like GE, and it's up 27% against the market of 500 since March of 2009. Well, somebody wasn't paying attention. There's obviously something wrong. But the fact that it even fell as much as it did back in 08 and 09, who was paying attention to that? What about October of 18? Basically, the financial industry says, just go to sleep and don't call me until we're down 20%, and then we'll talk about whether or not we should make a decision to protect your capital.
We'll have a conversation then. We probably won't do anything, but we'll talk to you then. That's about it.
The market always goes up. I mean, just go to sleep. I mean, I know you're down 50, but you don't want to get out now, right? I mean, that would be bad. Well, and maybe it would at 50%, unless, of course, it was the NASDAQ, which went to 80, minus 80.
You would feel much worse down 80. And that's the problem with that pie chart. That's the problem with modern portfolio theory. It's all based on history. It's got nothing to do with what's going on now. And it's like looking at GE and said, hey, GE is the only stock to be on the Dow Jones Index for 100 years. I'm going to buy that because it's a great old line company. It's reliable as can be until it's not. And when it's not, you need to pay attention now and not look back and say, well, in another 50 years, it's going to tell me that average is down enough that I should get rid of it. Meanwhile, you've lost half of everything you put in it. It doesn't make any sense. You need to be nimble enough to make those adjustments and not rely on historical returns to set your asset allocation.
Well, and you mentioned the pie chart, and that was basically an outcome. Growth of Harry Markowitz's work in 1952.
Correct.
On market statistics. And he has been quoted, and we've used his quote. He said, the financial industry has misapplied my theory. Well, his theory was to address one issue of risk. Actually, if you're invested in the stock market, there are two important issues of risk. If you own individual stocks, you have what is referred to as specific risk. What if the company has financial problems and it ends up in bankruptcy? That's a real risk. That's specific to the company. And what Markowitz's work showed was that if you own a portfolio of 20 stocks, that you understand the correlation of price behavior of those 20 stocks, you can control specific risk in your portfolio. That's diversification. If it's not just, I like this company, my wife, she spends a ton of money at that company, let's put that in the portfolio. You know, I go to the gas station, so I should own an oil company because I'm, you know, look how much money I spend there with my outside sales job. But that's not diversification. That's emotional love fest for my stock portfolio. a diversified portfolio needs to look at the correlations. Now, I had an interview, an online interview, with a highly paid professional who had a stock portfolio. And I said, you know, we'll do this for you if you want. You give us your what you hold, and we'll do an analysis of it for free. When we looked at it, almost everything in his portfolio was highly coordinated, highly correlated. I said, so as long as the market goes up, most of these are going to go up. But as soon as the market goes down, your diversification is not going to do you any good because everything is so correlated to one another. You can change that specific risk, but you have to change your portfolio a bit. Now, what's the second type of risk? The second type of risk is called systemic risk. You can't control that with diversification. However, the theory is you can. Well, asset allocation diversification does not control or protect you from major market declines that are due to black swan events, for one. How about global economic collapse, for another? How about just the country's in a budget battle and it can't figure out how to pay its own bills? There's another. How about a political fight? There's another. That's systemic risk, and asset allocation does not protect you on the downside, which is why we don't use that. We look at what's going on with prices. And as I explained to this individual in reviewing how we would protect his account, he said, wait a minute, stop right there. He said, I have been looking for somebody for years who actually has a process to get out of the way when things go bad. What do I have to do to move my account? Well, I guess we stop right here
and
we start doing paperwork.
Yeah, it's time to move. That's perfect. Don, so, we've got a call online here. We've got our old friend Gene from North Carolina has called in. Let's get him on before the break here. Gene?
Okay. Hi, Gene.
Welcome to the show. You know where you are. What's going on?
Hey, thanks for taking my call, Don and Perry. Yeah, you were talking about GE earlier. I had another stock for you to maybe discuss. Starts with letter G, ends with M, GM. Is that a value trap right now?
I don't know if you listened to the prior auto show, but Tom mentioned GM, and he said the problem with GM is nobody can figure out what GM is up to. So they are apparently developing an electric fleet of cars, and they are discontinuing the old sedan series. That's plural. And they've already discontinued a lot of the models and some of the brands. Whether or not it's had a good bounce off the bottom here, and I do not know. Actually, when I go look at Chaikin for fundamentals on it, they have it as very bullish, but I would consider that to be,
I just pulled a chart. Yes, look, it's up 77% in the last 6 months. So it's had a nice run. It's been down it's been in a trading range for years before that. Then it took a big dive, of course, in February with everything else. But it is up 77% off the bottom. And Gene, you are correct looking at that as a value trap. I'm not sure about the outlook for General Motors. I'm never sure about their corporate governance. I'm not sure, like Tom said, I'm not sure they know where they're going. But that's a strong move off the bottom this year.
I heard that some of the current problems are that there's currently a strike going on that I have heard very little about in the news, but I heard there is currently a strike going on in their company, and also that they're possibly their bond rating is going to be reduced down to junk status, which is, I think, where Ford, the bond rating is right
already
now.
Already is, right. And that tells you a lot, actually. It used to be if there was any sort of strike anywhere inside the GM family, that was big news. But GM has shrunk so much that now that if GM's on strike, it's like, eh, whatever. You know, we'll see where that goes. As far as, again, you're taking a lot of individual company risk with General Motors, and they haven't had a long-term uptrend. This trend is being driven by the big drop in February of this year, and then they've rebounded nicely off of that. But where they're going from there, Gene, I you know, that's That's like buying GE also to me. That's just taking a bit of a flyer. With non-serious money, there's, you know, you can put some over there and see what happens. But I wouldn't put serious money there. But that's just my opinion. And we don't track individual stocks. We track funds. So there you go.
No, I just looked at the weekly chart. I just looked at the weekly chart, and it is still below the return to public trading back in 2010.
Ah.
So I would view this as a short-term trade as long as you've got control over your stop losses on it. It does look like it has some upward momentum at the present time, but it has some significant resistance levels that are not too far above. So I would be watching for my downside on it. If you want, that would be a short-term play from our perspective.
Hey, thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you, Gene.
Good luck with that if you follow that.
And that brings us, Don, to the quarter hour here. We're out for another break. As much fun as we're having, we're going to have to get out of here for a second. I'd like to remind everyone that we do have our November webinar scheduled for our market update, November 7th, 9:15, right after the show. If you'd like to sign up for that, just go to iriradio.com. That is iriradio.com. Go to the webinar page. Just takes you a couple of clicks, and you will be registered. You'll get a link in your email. And on November 7th, after the show, you just click on that, and you'll be online with us, and you'll be able to see our screen, see what we're looking at, see what we're talking about. And the most important part is we always have plenty of time for your questions. So figure out what it is that's bothering you the most or where you think you might want to go on the market, and let us talk you through that. So give you a second opinion on anything in your portfolio or where you think this market might be going. And we'll be happy to cover that. Again, just go to iriradio.com. If you want to speak to us here live this morning, 888-312-5757. We'll get that done. That's 888-312-5757. Feel free to give us a call. We'd be glad to talk with you. Stay with us here. We will be right back.
Talking to myself and feeling old. Sometimes I'd like to quit. Nothing ever seems to fit. Hanging around, nothing to do but frown. Rainy days and Mondays always get me down.
Yeah, when you get older, there's lots of things you turn around and say, do you remember when?
Don't look at me when you say that. I'm not.
Yeah, I'm not sure I can. Just exactly how far back when are we talking about?
Right, right. It's past last Tuesday. He may not be there. I don't know. So
yesterday, my wife had a medical appointment, so we're down to Tacoma to deal with that. And somewhere along the way, she looked at me and she said, "You know, with working at home, do you like not having to get dressed up and go to the office?" I said, "Well, you know what I really like is to be able to fit back into my nice clothes." Staying at home makes eating a little too easy, and it's really hard. And I'm not alone. I mean, that's a big problem with
the COVID-15. That's right.
Yeah, a lot of people have just been adding on it, just a few pounds. You know, it's only 2 pounds this week.
How does that compounding work? Yeah, that's always.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you mentioned we were talking about the about market risk and you mentioned the pie chart in one of the promos. You know, the other side of that pie chart is another phone call that I had this week with an attorney, actually back on the East Coast, and we're talking about his portfolio. He says, you know, well, I'm in a 60-40 portfolio. I said, so you have 40% in bonds? He says, yeah. And I don't really want to be there, but my wife wants me to be there for safety. I said, well, let's talk about.
We need to talk. Yeah.
Safety of bonds. And so we pulled up charts. And if you go back and look at this last webinar, which you can get on our website, iriradio.com, and go to the video tab, the October webinar, I covered this. Actually, the September one, I covered this. Excuse me. So in September, we talked about bonds. Bonds work well as a safe haven, as long as interest rates are falling. And interest rates, actually, we can go back to 1979 with Paul Volcker when he was in charge of the Fed and said, we're going to break the back of inflation. And he did. Inflation has been continuously lower since Paul Volcker's new policies went into effect, took about 2 years. And every Fed chairman in the past has continued to follow the same, pretty much the same policy. So interest rates have fallen 95% over the last 35, 40 years, which means the value of bonds has grown. Now, if you're using bonds as your safe haven to manage risk in the stock portfolio, that means you are assuming interest rates will fall another 95% over the next 35 or 40 years from zero.
Don, it doesn't matter how many people we ask, we can't get anybody to say, yeah, I think that's going to happen. I think bonds are in for another 95% drop. Nobody believes that.
It's not going to happen. And so if you start doing some averaging, you can build a model and say, well, maybe bonds won't provide the 5.5% average. Maybe with ups and downs, I might eke out a little less than 1.5. But that assumption is 75% lower than you use to build your model, which means you have a bad assumption. And the stock market assumption of around 9%, given the high valuations today, should be adjusted down to a little over 3, which means that portion of your portfolio is really out of whack. But don't worry. Alfred E. Newman is here. What me worry? It'll all work out in the end. All I need is this 90-year time frame for these averages to catch up with me.
There's the long term. The long term, 50, 60, 90 years, that's the kind of time frame you need to make that process work for you. That's not realistic. We don't have that kind of time, especially in retirement. And you do not have that kind of time to have that sort of a hole blown in your retirement portfolio and have an investment advisor tell you, well, all you have to do is stop spending the money you saved your entire life for your retirement and just let it sit there because it's going to take decades to come back and then we'll be okay then, you know, after you're gone. That's not what anyone's investing for.
So the attorney said, I got to have my wife watch this. So I sent him a link to the video, and you can watch the video. It's in this September video. Go to our website, iriradio.com. The issue is, that's kind of, they tell you anyway, that's investing like the big boys. Well, actually, the big boys don't invest like that. They do other things. And do you want to actually do what the big boys do? In many cases, the answer is not so much. I remember a couple of decades back working with a physician, smart guy, but he didn't want to manage his own account. I worked with him for years until he died. And he said, well, you know, take a look at the Yale endowment model. They've been making a lot of money. Well, they have alternative investments in there. And alternative investments are something that are highly saleable. People love to hear about what the big boys are doing and to have an opportunity to participate. So you're working with a financial advisor who says, I have access to some really big institutional firms, and we have access to alternative investments that there's no way you will ever be able to participate. When you hear that, it's time to get up and leave.
You need to be somewhere else. We used to have that. We used to be on an investment platform that had institutional investors. Everything was on the institutional side. And it used to be one of the selling points. If you took $1 million and walked into a Goldman Sachs office, you can't get the managers we get there. We're over on the institutional side. And then 2007-8 hit, and turns out those institutional guys, they don't do anything for you to try to protect capital. They're used to investing for people with an infinite time frame. Doesn't matter. We're investing for an endowment or a corporation. It goes on forever. So we don't care about what's going on right now. That is not where you want to be.
And so there's a lot of research that's been done on these endowment rates of return, and summarizing a lot of the research, it basically concludes, quote, we find no evidence that the average endowment is able to deliver alpha, which means excess returns, relative to the public indices of the stock and bond market. There is little positive evidence to support the conclusion that private equity as an asset class is actually able to deliver as it is promoted in the sales conversation, which we just alluded to a minute ago, which is just a sales presentation. Like, give me your money, and let's see if we can put it someplace where hopefully it will work. And one of the major providers of this whole approach has been David Swensen, who's been responsible for the Yale's
endowment model. Sure.
And so he, you couldn't buy hundreds of thousands of acres of timberland yourself, and they did that. Well, how do you value that? Well, every year they make up a number. And
we get to value that, yeah, at Yale. Yeah. So that makes
we
that
think
makes
it's worth more money.
Pretty good,
so,
yeah.
So we're going to post a higher return this year. It's worth more money this year. It's worth more money this year. Look at this. That timber, it grows every year, right? So it's worth more money. Who determines what it's worth? Yeah, I was thinking about that while I was taking a shower this morning, and I decided that this is a good number. And that's kind of the way they made that work. Well, more recently, the market's been up, and the expectation for fiscal year 2019 was around 10% in a 60-40 portfolio. They actually came in under 7, and Yale under 6. That's the big boys at work. They have some very difficult times, so be on your alert. Our issue is just pay attention to what you have in your portfolio and have stop losses to know when to get out. And that requires a process to maintain your awareness of what's going on. And that's what we do. And if you'd like a free analysis of your portfolio, contact us at irradio.com or 800-317-9119. 800-317-9119. Send us an email, help@irradio.com. Sounds like we're out of time. Lord willing, we'll be back next week. Stay safe out there.